Russell Shorto is really helping us grab hold of one of those adages that we've heard for so long that, you know, that which is, which we're experiencing now, somebody experienced it at some point before. Nothing new is truly new. At one point, it was already happening sometime before. Will it go around in circles? All these different adages that we hear and read that have to do with helping us connect our present with the past. And Russell, you were sharing with us, as you help us connect these dots, some of the significant players, some of the significant people that you have written about in your book, Revolution Song.
Yeah, well, as I said before the break, I focused on six people because the whole point of it was a diversity of voices. I started out with an idea that I would just write their lives because I don't want to preach. I didn't want to tell anybody what it all meant because there have been a million books written about the American Revolution, and I think half of them probably tell you what it meant. So I stayed away from that. But then when I was at a certain point of the way through it, I realized this is about one thing. It's about the idea of freedom and how it plays out or doesn't play out in these different lives. For George Washington, it's all about political freedom, of course. That's what he's leading an army for. Mm-hmm. For Venture Smith, a black man who's enslaved, it's about freedom in this very immediate sense. For a woman, it's a very different kind of thing. And the woman I focused on, her name was Margaret Coghlan, and she was a teenager when the fighting broke out. And, you know, to talk about women's freedom or a women's movement at that time would be very anachronistic. You know, that wasn't going on. But this overall wave of freedom, everybody at the time was caught up in it. And where it mattered for women at that moment was on the idea of forced marriage. You know, people were suddenly saying a woman should not have to have a marriage forced on her. She should be able to marry for love. And that was exactly what the problem that Margaret Coghlan had. In the middle, her father was a British officer in New York in the middle when the fighting broke out, and he forced her to marry another British officer who she didn't despise. And she tried to rebel and couldn't. She was forced to marry him. She ended up leaving this guy who was abusive and spent the rest of her life kind of suffering the consequences. And hers is this very poignant tale of promise and hope and then tragedy. And it all goes back to, first of all, the American Revolution, but also to this notion of freedom. So that's, you know, I was really interested in how freedom plays out in that period in ways that we're very familiar with, for example, George Washington's story, but then in ways that, you know, don't seem to relate to it. But in fact, they all relate back to the same idea, which is why I called the subtitle of the book A Story of American Freedom. I also wanted to include a Native American perspective. So I include this, one of the people I focus on is a Seneca Indian who was known in English as Corn Planter, whose story is very poignant. He was a warrior, really a fighter, but he was also a leader and a philosopher, and he understood the complexities, he understood the difficulty, the impossibility, really, that the tribes were in after the war, especially. And so he gives this really, and he's kind of caught in the middle, and he struggles with both sides of things, and that is mirrored, I think, in his own upbringing. His mother was a Seneca woman. His father was actually a white American from upstate New York. And he, throughout his life, struggled with this kind of dual identity thing. So I found that a very, you know, I have to kind of fall in love with these people and be attracted to them at the same time.
And you mentioned...
And then the last person
I'm sorry,
I...
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you
Well,
about,
the last person...
Okay, you first.
Well, all right, the last person, just quickly, I included a British aristocrat to give the whole other side of the story from London, the story from England. Here's England trying to build an empire, and you know, they just want these colonies and this nonsense about freedom to end. So he gives, you know, that other side of the story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you really give us a well-rounded picture, a full picture of what was going on. And I wanted to ask you with regards to the corn planter. He had Native American parent, white parent, identity issues. He's you mentioned that one of the things that happened is during this, the American Revolution itself sent some shockwaves through the Native American nations, upsetting some traditional alliances and rivalries. Did the corn planter find himself at any point trying to be a mediator between the various nations, Indian, Native American nations, and or between Native America and America?
That is exactly the position he was in. He didn't want, you know, they met at a big council to decide, the Iroquois did, to decide, should we enter this war or not? And he argued that they should not. He said, this is a family quarrel, we're not part of that family. They overruled him, they decided to fight with the British, so he lost that battle. And then, though, he decided, okay, I'll go with the majority, and he fought the Americans along with the rest of them. Then, when the war was over, and the British lost, and therefore the Iroquois lost, the Iroquois say to him, okay, we want you to go and negotiate with the Americans on our behalf. So he's in this impossible position, doubly impossible, because he never wanted to fight to begin with. So then he is this real kind of philosopher and pragmatic political figure who knows he's got no cards to play, but is trying desperately to get something out of it, really to just find a future for his people.
So do you think, or you may have actually gathered this as fact, and I'm asking you, the fact that we had so many Native American nations deciding to join forces with the British, did that in any way impact their outcome once that war was over and what and how their fate turned out?
Yeah, I think it did. I think these larger forces of the American settlers pushing westward and pushing into native lands, that presumably was going to happen one way or the other. But the fact that the Iroquois, which was the largest confederation of tribes, had sided with the British just gave the Americans license to say, I mean, what these leaders said to Corn Planter was, you backed the wrong side. We told you to stay out of it. Now you've got no ground to stand on. So, the position he was in then was the Americans were basically forcing them to sell their lands. And at one point, this very kind of poignant interaction, he actually goes to meet with George Washington when Washington's president and says to him, this is his second meeting, and he says, look, we're now being forced to sell our lands. Can you at least help me with one thing? Before we've sold lands and we got money and we spent the money and it was gone and then we had nothing. Now, I've heard that there are these things called banks, and that if you put the money in the bank somehow, I've heard about this thing called interest. Can you, as a fellow leader, explain this to me and help me to figure out? I mean, you can see him trying to get something out of this. Yeah. Like, how can we just have a future? You know, okay, you're taking our lands, but how can we at least have a future? So it's this very kind of emotional situation, and it kind of embodies the situation that the natives were in as a group.
I know, Russell, that our time is just about gone. Could you briefly, though, share with us that connection between what was happening then and what's going on in America now?
Yeah, wow. You know, it was people fighting for freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion. It was people fighting to say that whoever we are all Americans. We are all in this together. These same things are going on right now, these same battles. It's come. When I started working on this book years ago, I thought I was writing history. But suddenly it feels like, wow, these things matter. These documents matter. The fact that they were enshrined into the founding of the country, it's actually meaningful. And also this kind of grand struggle between these two sides and these two opposing views about what America is and where it ought to go that we're in the midst of right now,
yes,
that was there 200 plus years ago. So in a sense, you know, it's kind of sad in a way that, you know, you try to learn from history, but maybe by going back to it, by rethinking it, and we can appreciate the values that we were, that the country was founded on.
I appreciate you so much for putting this together for us. Revolution Song, A Story of American Freedom. Where can everyone get the book?
It's at Amazon, it's at Barnes & Noble, it's at local bookstores. I have a website, russellshorto.com. It should be all around.
And ladies and gentlemen, Shorto is spelled capital S-H-O-R-T-O, russellshorto.com. Russell, thank you so much for being with us today and enlightening us in such, I consider, in a very, very inspiring way.
Thank you very much, Carl. It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you, sir. Stay with me, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be right back.